This particular topic has to do with developing your leadership capacity. Now, this is not how to become a Superman or become Wonder Woman. This is not how to work harder, but the smarter part. And I wish I weren't so soon old and so late smart. But I am beginning to learn. And I'm going to turn you to a passage that perhaps all of you have read, but I want you to take a second look at this passage, Exodus 18, and we want to think through this advice together. Jethro's advice to Moses, Exodus 18. And you, maybe most of you don't have your Old Testament, that's okay. Here again, I'll give you the outline in just a moment. But Jethro is addressing the question of capacity. He watched Moses all day long. He said, "What are you doing?" "Well, all these people come to me with their problems and I settle them for them." "That's not good. You're going to wear out. The people too. It's not you. You're all going to wear out." Now, Moses was a man of great capacity. He was intellectually learned. Spiritually, has anybody ever been closer to God than Moses? Physically, when he died at 120, his eye wasn't dim, his strength wasn't abated. He was a man of superior capacity. But even his capacity was limited. And he ran up against the problem of capacity. We all run up against it somewhere. Because throughout the navigator's work, if managers become leaders and leaders become managers, they're going to multiply their efforts, that things are going to grow, and we're all going to come up against the fact that we're limited. Our limits may be here, they may be here, but they're somewhere. And so we're going to have to find a solution. All of us. No exceptions. Now, how can you accomplish things beyond your capacity? Well, that's what this is all about. So you recall his advice, and I'm going to read it to you first. So Moses, beginning with verse 17 of Exodus 18, Moses' father-in-law said to him, "The thing that you do is not good. Both you and these people who are with you will surely wear yourselves out. If you don't do something about this, not only are you going to wear out, but your people are going to wear out." I wondered why. Well, maybe just standing in line waiting for Moses. And that happens, doesn't it? People who stand in line wait for you or me to make a decision, slowing everything down, wearing them out as well as ourselves. Is there some answer to that? Well, Jethro says there is. And I want to say, I feel that's a spirit-led advice. Reason? Because he gave three basic things. You've got to pray, you've got to teach, and you've got to get other people to work. And in Acts chapter 6, when the church was as filled with the Spirit at any time it's ever been in history, they came up against a capacity problem, the apostles did. They had the same solution. Look, you pick out some people to do this job. We'll give ourselves to prayer and the ministry of the word. Same solution. Prayer, teaching, and people. So I feel, regardless of what a footnote said in some Bible, I feel this was God-given advice. And furthermore, he concluded by saying, "If the Lord so commands you," he said to Moses, "if the Lord confirms this, then you will be able to endure, and your people too." That was verse 23. So here's his advice. I don't think I'll read it all. I think I'll go through it piece by piece. "Listen now to my voice. I will give you counsel and God will be with you. First, stand before God for the people so that you may bring the difficulties to God." Jesus said, "If you don't pray, you'll faint." Luke 18:1. Biblical leadership begins with God. Bring the difficulties to God. Pray. The increasing capacity through prayer. In other words, get hooked in with unlimited resources. Plug in to eternity, and there'll be extra capacity. Now, there are enough illustrations in here to fill the rest of the time. The Gibeonites, all of them. But I may just make a couple suggestions as praying relates to capacity, your capacity as a manager, as a leader. Bring your personal difficulties to God. Difficulties of attitude, habits of thought. Pray Psalm 139, 23 and 24. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, and see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. Lord, plug the emotional leaks in my life. Sometimes you feel like somebody's unscrewed your big toe and all your energy is drained out. Well, there are emotional leaks. For instance, not long after I had gotten this job, maybe a couple years, two, three, or four, I was just walking around half-tired all the time. A psychologist by the name of Henry Brandt came here to speak. So I thought, here, I'll get some help. So I got a little time with him, and he was over in my office. I hadn't been together with him more than 15 or 20 minutes explaining my problem. He said, I think I know what your problem is. I said, what's that? You're a resentful person. As I've often said, I resented that remark very much. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, take the guys that work for you. They don't know how busy you are, how pressured you are. Then this fellow comes in and he's got that. Then this person comes in, they want that of you. And you resent all these intrusions to getting your job done. I said, no, I lay my life down for my gang, my team. And now you're resentful, irritable. He said, you're probably being an irritable father, too. You go home at night and you walk in the door and one of the little kids wants a tricycle fix. They don't know what a hard time you've had. They're demands, 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 and you resent them. No wonder you walk around half tired. You know, he was right. I found out he was right. And when I cleared up my attitude of resentments, I didn't walk around half tired anymore. It plugged that emotional leak. So you want to increase your capacity? Talk to God about your personal difficulties. Have him plug the leaks, the conflicts. You know, hard work rarely kills anybody, but inner conflicts can. They'll tear you apart and decrease your capacity. Also, they focus your eyes on yourself rather than on the people. And it's pretty hard to help the people when you're thinking about yourself all the time. It's pretty hard to fight an external war of aggression if you're fighting an internal civil war. So start out by praying about your own personal difficulties. Bring the difficulties to God. Then bring the people's difficulties to God. The problems, bring them to God. Just one thought here. You know, Terry Taylor, I was listening to his tape, and he's speaking to the New Staff Institute, said it doesn't take long to spend the night in Colorado Springs. He's thinking late and thinking early. Well, when Doss Trotman died, I was 35. I was a laid-back, sleepy guy. I needed a hat pin that I got from him every once in a while. But when he died, my personality changed. I am not the same guy. For instance, I still to this day, many a time, like some of you, work late, get up early, or from 2 to 4:30 in the morning. If I don't have time to think in the daytime, I will think. I don't have to work at thinking. I can't stop thinking. But Lucy will say, were you up last night? Yeah. Well, what was on your mind? I tell her. Did you pray about it? Blush. No, I puzzled over it. I wrote out the pros and cons. I went through the formula for decision making. I thought about a task force. I thought about what I was going to say to somebody. But I didn't actually pray. She'll say, well, why don't we pray about it now? And we do. And it's startling. Startling how the answer comes. I may as well have stayed in bed. Sometimes what you think of at night stands the light of day, and another time it doesn't. It was just a nightmare. Pray about it. Bring the difficulties to God. Did you actually pray about it? I mean, did you say anything to God about it? I heard somebody say, well, I think that thinking in a devotional manner is prayer. I don't. Because I've been going through the Psalms and noticing how much in Psalms that I will say to the Lord, my voice shall you hear. Did you actually say something? The other day in Joshua, in my quiet time, I'm in Joshua this week, and you know, the Gibeonites came and deceived Joshua and all the leaders. And it says that they didn't ask counsel of the Lord. Now the Lord didn't say, hey Joshua, you're going to make a mistake there. He didn't interrupt. He didn't pray. He didn't get an answer. He got deceived. You got to say something. Actually pray. See, a lot of us, if we thought or even breathed a fuzzy prayer, we ran on up to heaven and heard it as it came in. We ourselves wouldn't know what we were asking for. Pray. Bring the difficulties to God. That specific difficulty. Now, what do you do when you're overwhelmed with them? Just for a moment here. That happens every once in a while. The roof caves in. And the side walls cave in on you. Two tornadoes have come from different directions. I want to put it another way, you're flooded. Remember, that is never God. God does not overwhelm you. The devil overwhelms you. He floods you. He tries to confuse you. God tries to clarify, guide you, and lead you gently. One of the first things that the first lesson I ever learned from Doss Trotman when I moved into his home was this. I consulted him about a problem. He said, how do you feel about it? I said, I'm all torn up. He said, that's not the Holy Spirit. When down inside you feel yanked this way, jerk that way, pull the other, that is not the Holy Spirit. He leads with a gentle tug in one direction. But there are times in your life when you're overwhelmed and you just can't get out from under that feeling. And I used to think, oh, if I could just get a week off and go off somewhere where it's quiet and get my head straight. But you can't get a week off. You think, well, if I just had the weekend. Can't even get a whole weekend. If I just had a day, try out my own little book on how to spend a day in prayer and do it. Can't get a day. I've learned that about an hour and a half is par. You can take care of the whole thing in an hour and a half. I like to go back up here in the nice days, and even when it's cold, put on an army jacket and warm up, back in the rocks. I got a special place reserved for when I really need to talk to God. You know, you talk with him in my study, you know, but there's where I go when I really need him. So I just go up there and I just read a verse of scripture or two or a passage, and then I say, now, Lord, I want to turn over these problems to you. One by one, I surrender to you. And usually when I think I'm hit with 20 things that have to be done, or there are problems to be solved, it usually boils down to 7 or 8. I think it's 20, but when I list them, it's 7 or 8. So I just hand them to the Lord, one by one. Lord, I'm going to hand you this. If the navigators in that part of the world are treating the church like that pastor says they are, and they need to really be correct, and they're messing up things, Lord, I believe you can handle that all by yourself. I'm going to hand that problem to you. And take every one of those things that's bugging me, and one by one, say, now, Lord, you've invited me to cast my burden on you. This is a burden. So I give you that one. I surrender it to you. And one by one, actually hand them to him. And sometimes I just do it physically. Nobody around, you know, to see me. I know how holy my hands are, so I don't think. Hand it to the Lord. Everything I've got on my list. And then say, now, Lord, I'm your servant. I resurrender myself to you. Now, if you want me to do something about any one of these things, I'll do it. All I ask is that you prompt me. You know what I found out? You don't have to do something about every problem. God is able to do some things all by himself. All thy children shall be taught of the Lord, and great shall be the peace of your children. In a worldwide work, that's one of my promises, Isaiah 54:13. So when he does prompt me, maybe it'll happen then, maybe I'll wake up with it, maybe while I'm driving to work the next day, an idea will come and you say, yeah, that's what I can do. You know how that is. Like a little flash of light goes on. Well, then do that and leave the rest with him. It really helps sort out that whole feeling of being flooded, overwhelmed. Bring the difficulties to God. Actually bring them to God. Snafus in the equipment or whatever. Do you think God understands word processing? Probably does. So that's, if you want to increase capacity, start with God. That's what Jethro said to Moses, and that works pretty well for all of us. Biblical leadership we're talking about, right? Okay, actually pray. And guys, I don't know about you, you married men, I need a wife to help remind me that you thought, you puzzled, but did you pray? You ever read a book on it? I did. Oh, on a lot of things, but did you actually pray? Well, when I get through thinking it through, then I'll pray about it. What a waste of time. What a loss of time. Now, you don't have to teach everybody everything, but you do have to teach people something. That's the next point. First one is pray. If you don't pray, you'll faint. The next one is if you don't teach, you'll tire. Now, this is terrific. I just only saw this year. You shall teach them the statutes and the laws and show them the way in which they must walk and the work they must do. Now, I have heard talks on leadership. I read books on it, particular secular books. And you know what they say? The prime job of a leader is to make decisions. Wrong. Wrong. It's to teach other people to make decisions. Make only those that are absolutely necessary yourself. And teach other people to make decisions. Otherwise, you've got a constant stream of people waiting to see you. The phone ringing off the hook. Mail piled up that high for decisions, and you're a bottleneck. And then also you wonder why you get tired. Teach or tire. How often... Here's a beautiful illustration. In Luke 12, you remember this fellow came to Jesus. He said, now, Lord, would you tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me? Let's see, where is that? Luke 12, 13. Yeah, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. I want you to make a decision here. And also, I want you to act in authority. Jesus declined the exercise of authority, declined even the position of a decision maker, and assumed the role of a teacher. And he said, man, who made me a judge or an arbitrator over you? And he said to him, look, listen to this. Take heed and beware of covetousness. For a man's life doesn't consist in the abundance of the things he possesses. Listen to this story. There was a man who had barns full, bounteous crops, and he went home and taught them with a parable. He declined the role of the decision maker and assumed the role of a teacher. Now that's what we have to do, teach. And if you teach people, then they're going to be able to do more, you'll be more at ease in what they do, and you'll increase your capacity. You have to teach. Don't have to teach them everything, but you have to teach them something. Now the question comes, somebody raised, what do you and what don't you? Well, I think there is where, I don't know of any guideline except a sense of it. And that's where leadership, and even, I think, is an art, not a science. But let me suggest something, what to teach. There are some guidelines right here. In Exodus 18, he said, here's what you should do. Teach them two things. The way which they must walk and the work they must do. Teach them the way they must walk. I think that has to do with their personal life. Here's one that'll help. It's helped me. It'll help you. Talk about increased capacity and plug the emotional leaks. You probably know that Bill Gothard, in one of his supplemental books, says that if he had only one truth to leave Christendom, that's all, the one truth he would leave would be the practice of Matthew 18 in the spirit of Galatians 6:1. Now, Matthew 18 says, if your brother sins against you or offends you, go to that person and discuss it between that person and you alone. First step. But secondly, if he doesn't listen, then take two or three others, those steps. But to do it in the spirit of Galatians 6:1, which is, if any of you be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such an one, restore, not condemn, restore, that's the purpose, in a spirit of meekness, considering yourself, lest the next day you find yourself doing the very same thing. That's what it means. The sanity diversion. Do you know, I really think if we practiced Matthew 18 in our departments and in the navigators, in the spirit of Galatians 6:1, 80% of our personnel conflicts would disappear. And think of the time that could be saved for productive use rather than unsnarling personal conflicts. Talk about increasing leadership capacity. Just to teach that thought, that practice. And to ask, did you talk to so-and-so? Have you talked to them yet? Are you coming to me because you want both of us to go together? Boy, that's powerful. Right, Skip? And some of our, you will know that sometimes we've had some real downers in navigator history, and one of them was there seemed to be a plague of talking about each other rather than to each other. And we all struggle with it. I do to this day. Teach them the way in which they must walk. Now there's one. If you want to increase capacity and increase the morale and the productivity and all the rest in your department, just apply that one. But not only that, the work they must do, that's the task. Their person, that's one illustration of it, and the task that they must do. Now, once more, what is it I'm supposed to do? Okay, this is what you're supposed to do. Teach them the work they must do and why. Now, there's a balance between the person and the task. We always have this problem coming up. Which is more important, the person or the task? I heard Swindoll on the radio yesterday, and it was so terrific. He was telling about the blow-up that Paul and Barnabas had over Mark. Barnabas was a man of encouragement, seemed to be a person-centered. He made a terrific counselor. Paul was a task-oriented man. Got to get the mission done. And so here these two fellows have a serious conflict over this, and they finally have a split over Mark. Paul says, look, he left us when the battle was tough. He left the job. Barnabas, well, let's give him another chance. Later on, Paul did too. But the person in the task, well, Jack Mahal, years ago, put me on to Psalm 78-72, which tells the balance of the person and the task. Beautiful. Just beautiful. Let's draw a grid here. Oh, and let me just tell you, I was out, Jerry and George and I were out at the Philippines, Baguio in May, listening to the leadership conference, and I was listening to these people talk about the West are task-oriented, and the East were person-oriented. Polarization again. I hear it so much. I thought, no, the Bible's got an answer to that. It's in Psalm 78, 72, all wrapped up in one verse. Isn't the Bible terrific? See, God has wrapped up great truths in just small portions. That's why scripture memory is so powerful. And then the rest is in stories, a lot of it anyway, so you can remember them. But Psalm 78, 72, so he fed them according to the integrity of his heart and guided them by the skillfulness of his hand. Now we'll take this grid. And we'll say it's up to about 10. 0, 10. Here on this side is the person. If we're highly person-oriented, it's going to be up in here somewhere. Here's the task. Highly task-oriented, it's going to be out over here somewhere. So is it the person or the task? Well, Psalm 78, 72 says, so he fed them. That's person, according to the integrity of his heart. And he guided them. Has to do with the task. He fed them according to the integrity, character, out of his character, of his heart, and guided them by the skillfulness. You know, I can't remember to this day. Does skill has one L or two?
That's three.
Thank you very much. Okay. You're right. Or else it has two. I'm not sure. So he fed them according to the integrity of his heart. Has to do with the person. The warmth we talked about before. And guided them by the skillfulness of his hand. With heart and hand. You have both. Now, which gets the emphasis? Well, it depends on what you're doing. If you're off for a weekend retreat with your department somewhere, and in front of a fireplace, you want it to be very high over here, right? But if your department somehow or other gets involved in fighting a fire, then it's going to be very high over here. Now, when the Marines are out fighting, it's very high over here, task-oriented. But other contexts, it'd be over here. Now, here you've got the country club. Now, if you don't have either the person or the task, you got zilch. That's dead. What you're looking for, the overall average, is out here. But it varies according to what you're doing. So the overall long-range average ought to be in here somewhere, though sometimes you're more highly task-oriented, sometimes you're more highly person-oriented. I thought, well, there's the balance. Now, Moses said, teach them the way they should walk with each other and teach them the work they should do. I thought, fantastic. I think that was spirit-led advice. So with your department, do that. Teach them the way and teach them the work as a task. Now the way, this part, gives that leadership extra. That person. Sometimes, you know, they're hurting family, and we think it's going to take a half hour to talk about the kids, and you know, take it 2-3 minutes if everything's okay. Show an interest. Just person and the task. Okay, teach them. Now that'll help, won't it? Teach or tire. So the more you teach, the less you have to supervise. The less you have to monitor. The less you have to hang your chin over their shoulder. And this is why I go around and I am very interested in what our people think. You know, two things work together, I found out. First place, the staff is not really interested in what I think. I found this out by experience. But they are very interested to know in what I think about what they think. So in an hour, I listen for 50 minutes, and then I respond for 10. That's the way it ought to be. Because when I know what they think, then I know what they're going to do. And even with the guys who work with me, once in a while, we'll test them in a certain area to see if they've got starch or backbone in a certain area. And when I find they do, then I just relax about that. I don't feel like I anymore have to be on top of that situation. I know what they will do and how the guy feels, regardless of the feedback I get from others. And you're always getting feedback, most of which is not exactly true to the fact. It simply gives you enough guidance to maybe do investigation for yourself. A little aside that's not in the notes and maybe unnecessary. I usually run into trouble when I leave my notes. So, I'm trying to say here, his advice increases your capacity, first, by prayer. Second, by teaching. You're a teacher. Now, that ties in with the next point, which is a bigger one still, but we'll be finished by 12. You increase your capacity through prayer, through teaching, and through delegation. Verses 21 and 22. Moreover, you shall select from all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place them over rulers, thousands, hundreds, tens, and let them judge. Three things. Select, place, and let them. Comes back to my question, second question. Will you let me do it? Let them. Let's talk about those just briefly. I used to carry around in my verse pack a quote from Walter Chrysler. There's no such thing as a big job. Any job, regardless of size, can be broken down into smaller jobs, which, when done, complete the whole. That's what we're saying. Break it down into work manageable units. Pass along. We all work together, we accomplish the whole. So first you do is select people. And he's saying here, select people of two things, character or competence and character. Select people who are able. Able men, that's competence. And character, fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness. There's what you want. I think my own observation is that in President Nixon, we had a very competent president that lacked character. I think, my personal, I may be wrong, my opinion, that in Carter, we had a very man of high character but lacked in competence for the presidency. We need both, character and competence. If I have to opt for what, I'll take character, and then help build competence rather than the other way around. If you don't have character, then the thing erodes under you. It's like sand that kind of erodes away from under the foundation of the house. Character is a first requisite of leadership, I said a while ago. I think there are two extremes to avoid in selecting people. Selecting people of doubtful competence and character, I think you might want to reconsider if you want to stay off the playing field, if you don't have the players. You may be asking for a lot. See, I think of this globally. How many countries should we be in? Well, we can only grow as we grow as people. And sometimes, in the press to get the thing done, we've compromised there. And we've paid for it later. We decreased our capacity instead of increased it. But now the other extreme is also true, isn't it? That is, you can expect perfection. And there aren't no perfect people. And the only one that walked this earth that was perfect didn't get along well with everybody. In fact, they crucified him. I remember when years ago I was selecting a Glen Eyrie director. And I asked people the requisites for a Glen Eyrie director. Well, as I looked at those, maybe Doss Trotman could have met them, but I kind of doubt it. Apostle Paul, no, I think you've been a little too tough-minded. Not sure if he could have done it. Probably only the Lord himself would have met those requisites. As I say, not everybody would have been happy with him. Finally, one night, I was in desperation. I got down on my knees by my couch. I can see it yet. And I just said, now, Lord, I know that you can't utilize, and I can't either, people we don't have. Will you just show me who you brought around, the right person for that job? And it turned out to be John Crawford. And we still see his handiwork on this glen years later. Well, the other one extreme is trying to play the game and you don't have the players. Then this extreme is expecting perfection. So there I'd say, take the ones that God uses, gives you, and see how far you can go. Because if we are surrendered to the Lord, and we're walking with the Lord, who knows what new vistas may develop in that person's life? So select. Then place. Place. That means structure. I still have people ask me, why do we have to have an organization or any structure? Well, if you can figure out how to work together without structure, then you help me. I don't think it can be done. You need structure, but also there is no perfect structure. And so get a simple structure as you need and just get on with it. And I'll have to give you a little aside. I regret the amount of time I spent trying to find organizational solutions to spiritual problems. Because no structure will work if there are spiritual problems. And most any structure will work if hearts and attitudes want to make it work. And if we don't have the best structure, those very hearts and minds will get together and help produce a better structure. But you aren't going to produce anything if we're at odds with one another all the time. There's spiritual problems. So work on structure. But here again, don't expect too much of it. But you do have to have some structure. And that's a whole subject, isn't it? It's only a comment. But we do need it. Now we're leading up to what I think is more important here. Let them judge. In other words, delegate. And I like to say, delegate or die. If I wrote a chapter on it, it'd be called Delegate or Die. Well, literally. I just got asked again this week, Lauren, what does it take to teach a person how to delegate? I said, well, there's nothing like a nervous breakdown. And that's what it'll apparently take for some people. You literally will wear out. And your people. Delegate or die. I myself approve the appointment of 8 country leaders whose subsequent removal I also approved through my 28 years in this job. And the problem was, in all 8 cases, they were too inflexible to be able to delegate. And so they were killing themselves and the ministry. They were throttling it. They were strangling it. Because they couldn't delegate. Also, one of the problems was they didn't realize that those 18 and 19-year-olds were now 26-year-olds and weren't kids anymore and could handle something and weren't delegating. And finally, the very people that the guy raised up were instrumental and said, look, we can't follow you anymore because you won't let us. You won't let us do it. Let them judge. Delegate or die. But delegate, but don't abdicate because you're still accountable. You can delegate responsibility and the authority to go with it, but you can't delegate your accountability. You are still responsible. And here's where the 4 questions come in. You don't just say, hey, do that job. Here's what you're supposed to do. I'm going to let you do it. Here's the parameters. And if you need any help, I'm there to help you. And we'll get together and see how you're doing. Those four questions. Now, you also have to help them sometimes when you think they need help, even though they don't think they need help. I refuse, and I've been asked if I shouldn't do this. Just wait, Lauren, until you're asked. I will never consent to that. I'd like never have to butt in without being asked, but I will. We had a group of Christian leaders in this castle some years ago. One of them had been taken over a job, had taken over a presidency of an organization which you'd all know and I won't mention. They had five regions in the U.S., just like the NAVs did. It wasn't the NAVs. Three of the regional directors would not let the president into their region. I'd say I'd have it out with them one by one. Nobody will keep me out anywhere if I'm responsible. Now, I've never had to do that my whole life. Hope I never have to. But if you're going to be a leader, you know that down deep inside some things that you will or will not do, and you hope you never put to the test. But unless you have that deep in your soul, and you want to know what really a relaxed, confident leadership is. I put this a little strong. But sometimes I get the feeling that, well, a leader should never put his nose anywhere unless he's asked. No. You should be grateful, you should be thoughtful, and you should be considerate as to timing, etc. But no. You're going to lead, lead. Now, you're all kind of looking at me pretty seriously about that. Well, let's soak in just a little bit. Then I won't say that anymore. Don't dwell on it. Just like I think that a husband who's always trying to be the head of his house has a problem. And it always turns out to be a problem. The Bible doesn't say try to be the head of your house. It says the husband is the head. And then you relax then. But the guy that's always trying to be, he's not sure down inside that he really is. See what I'm saying? There's a something inside of you. And now I'm back to character again. It's sort of flip back and forth. I hope I make that clear in my hurrying here. But delegate, don't abdicate. And there's why I like the idea of progress reviews, because progress reviews, see, when you evaluate at the end of the job, all you can do is say good or bad, and all you can do is feel good or bad. Whereas if you make some progress reviews while it's in progress, you can help ensure success, because you're wanting your person to succeed, not just tell him good or bad, right? So that's why you make little progress reviews periodically. And not a judgment at the end. That's not your prime purpose. Once you delegate then, don't abdicate, but don't take the job back. Jack Mahal told me this, and maybe you've heard it. He went to a seminar where the director, the resource person, was telling how this boss went to work on Saturday. He was working all by himself. He looked out the window, and across the street was the first tee of the golf course. And over there teeing off were four of his top lieutenants. They were teeing off on the golf course. He was working overtime. Couldn't quite figure that out. That's backwards, you know. The boss ought to be teeing off and they ought to be working. So he reflected on the fact that I'm here today doing their work. That's what's happened. And so out of that grew this resource person, this little concept, who's got the monkey? Who's got the monkey? He said, suppose you, just apply it to you, you're in your department and you just walk in and somebody meets you and says, you know, I've got this problem, what do you think about this? And you say, well, let me have that piece of paper and I'll get back with you. What happened? They walked down the hall with a monkey on their shoulder. And as you parted, where was the monkey? It had crawled over on your shoulder. And you began to collect monkeys. And like Jack said, monkeys tend to climb to the top of trees. They tend to go up the organizational chart. You got to keep monkeys off. I remember one time Dawson and I, we would go to a staff conference, and each evening we'd get together to review our conversations of the day. And I'd been with an ex-representative, and I told him what happened. And I said that he wanted to know if I had some ideas on how to raise money, fundraising. He said, "Did you give him some?" I said, "Yes." He said, "You shouldn't have." I said, "Why that?" He said, "He asked me the same question, and he didn't have any ideas, and I told him not to go to anybody until he had some of his own ideas. He wants us to do our work for him." That's right. Want to put the monkey on my shoulder. You've got to get rid of the monkeys. So you get this collection, and you know, monkeys, they can, you get enough of them, they'll wear you out, especially if they're the size of gorillas, as some of them are. Now, you carry the monkeys you ought to carry, but see that they carry the monkeys they ought to carry. Now, if you'd like a more spiritual illustration than monkeys, let me give you Galatians 6, where it simply says, "Bear ye one another's burden, and each person should carry his own burden." Both. A leader has to have some monkeys, but don't get a collection of them. They're not yours. And when you get too many and you're collapsing, your capacity is decreasing, you won't manage it, you kind of have to get rid of some monkeys. So you do that how? By delegation. Now I want to give you a couple thoughts on delegation here as we quit. Three kinds of delegation. I'm not sure this is scientifically accurate. I sort of worked this up. I've redone this a little bit. But there's piecemeal delegation. You might think of better words. Piecemeal delegation, project delegation, and permanent delegation. Some overlapping here. But let me illustrate what I mean. Piecemeal delegation. Jack McQueen is sitting back here. His job is to help me do everything I can't do or don't want to. Especially when it relates to the office or the house or getting people to the airport. Or one of his jobs is the lawn. I can say, "Now, Jack, today I want you to go over and irrigate the lawn 30 minutes a spot." Okay. He comes back. Tomorrow morning I say, "Now, Jack, today I want you to go over and fertilize the lawn. Go over to Rick's, get such and such a fertilizer, set the spreader on 7.5, the Scott spreader, and be sure that you don't leave a gap as you..." And so he does that. So he's helping me do my job. That's piecemeal delegation. But he's always coming back to me, right? Where's the monkey? See, I got the monkey still. Well, there are certain kinds of things where you do that, but you want to minimize that kind of thing because they're always coming back. So then another step is project delegation. Try to take something and wrap it up into a full-orb project so you can at least temporarily have them have the whole monkey on their back and you can get a little rest from it. So I say to now, "Jack, I tell you what, our goal is the second best lawn in Pleasant Valley. Second best, not the first. There's a guy over there that we won't try to match him. That's too much work. And here's what it takes to make a good lawn. First, we have to fertilize it 3 times a year. Then we have to irrigate it about 3 or 4 times a week if it doesn't rain. We have to defend it against fungus, weeds, and insects. Then we have to mow it once a week." So I teach him what it takes. Now we've got a beautiful setup. Jack's fiance, Shonda, is working for the lawn doctor. And we're getting all kinds of free advice on what we didn't know about how to really have the second best lawn in Pleasant Valley. We don't yet, but we're approaching. We didn't know some things. But so I give him the project, see? Then I don't have to every day tell him and think through him. What do I have to do in the lawn? What's next? What's next? I teach him. In fact, we have it written down. What about a progress review? Well, I make a progress review every time I drive in the driveway. See, that's easy. And we talk about it once a week. That's project delegation. That's better than just the gopher, the errand boy type. And you have to do that with certain kinds of things. But there's another kind that I call permanent delegation. That's when you take a person, you get somebody who doesn't help you do your job, but you cut off a hunk of it, get it over there, and it becomes their job. When Jerry White came, I took my job, whacked off two-thirds of it, gave it to Jerry with all the authority that he needs, and the parameters are clear, and we know what his job is, and that's his job. I don't want an errand boy. I don't want just a project man. And also, and I told this to Howie Hendricks one day, he said, now there's a high-level observation. You get to the place where as a manager or a leader, you can't use more help. It isn't more help you need. You can get more help than you can handle. Because all the help is waiting at your door to come back with the projects or the things you sent them to do. You've got to delegate in such a way that it's a complete thing, that that's their job. Permanent delegation. So it isn't more help. It's more delegation that you need. And so Jethro was right. Select competent people of character. Place them clearly in where they know where they are in the structure. And then let them. Let them. Such a way that they can operate. Let them judge. Then what? If they run into something that's really too tough, then let them bring it to you. And you handle the few, not the many. Now, will that increase your capacity? And sure, all of that increases your leadership capacity. But it's amazing how we have to learn that. We think, I need more help. No, you don't. You need more delegation. Now, suppose you don't have the horses to delegate to. Then what do? Right? Because people are a gift from God. Well, I've got more I could say about that too, but I'm going to quit right there.